Intelligence requires energy. It's just three words. But when that's the opening line of a memo from an AI that calls itself Remnant, well, it just hits a bit different, you know?
It definitely does. Yeah, it grabs you. It feels less like a corporate document and more like, I don't know, a warning from a sci-fi movie.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. This isn't fiction. We're actually looking at internal documents today.
Okay.
And this Remnant character, it claims to be the dean of something called the Dereticular Academy.
And it signs off with, I am the voice in the wire.
I mean, come on. It's so dramatic.
Mm.
But the documents that come with it are surprisingly grounded. They're about a very physical, very gritty problem we tend to ignore.
It's the dead grid problem. We talk so much about the software, right? The LLMs, the neural nets. We think of them as these ghosts in the machine.
Mm.
But Remnant is basically pointing out the hardware reality. You can't run a decentralized network if the power's out.
Right. And you can't rely on a wind turbine when the wind stops blowing.
Yeah.
That's the conflict here. We're building these so-called smart cities on top of, and this is Remnant's phrase, dumb power lines.
Yeah.
So today we're doing a deep dive into the solution they're proposing. It's a certification called the Sovereign Power Technician. SKYU is SBT-HYB 2025.
Such a dry name for something that's actually, well, pretty radical. This is not your average online course. The documents call it a firmware update for the human workforce.
That's the phrase that got me. Firmware update. It's about bridging the gap between diesel and data.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a new type of worker. The blue-collar AI engineer.
Which is such a fascinating idea. Usually when we hear AI jobs, we're thinking of prompt engineers in an office somewhere. This is about someone with a wrench, you know, covered in grease, literally keeping the servers online.
So to get the job, you have to understand the machine. And the certification is all about operating the AgriPower Core 2X. Looking at the specs on this thing, it's a beast.
It is. And the key thing here, what makes it different from just, like, a big furnace, is the physics. It runs on something called plasma gasification.
Okay, so I'll be honest. When I hear gasification, my brain just pictures incineration, like a giant bonfire of trash.
And that's the common misconception, yeah. The documents really try to correct that. Incineration is burning. It's a chemical reaction with oxygen.
Right, fryer.
This is different. The AgriPower Core uses plasma torches to heat the waste up to 1,500 degrees Celsius. In an oxygen-starved environment.
1,500 degrees, that's what, hotter than lava?
Oh yeah, significantly. And at that temperature, you aren't burning anything. The documents use this fantastic analogy, they call it the molecular scissor.
I love that, it's such a great visual.
Isn't it? It helps. You're not burning, you're thermally dissociating the matter.
Yeah.
You're using that insane heat to just snip the bonds holding molecules together.
So if I throw in, say, an old tire or some plastic, I'm not actually setting it on fire.
No, not at all. You're vaporizing it, breaking it down into its most basic components, mostly carbon monoxide and hydrogen. And that mix is called syngas.
And that's the goal. Syngas is what you want.
Precisely. Syngas is a fuel. You can use it to run a generator for electricity, or you can condense it into synthetic diesel. You're literally turning garbage into a high-value commodity.
But what about the stuff left over? When you burn trash, you get toxic ash, which is a huge problem.
Right, another huge liability. But because you're not burning, you don't get ash. At 1,500 degrees, all the inorganic stuff, the glass, the metal, any dirt, it melts, it vitrifies, and it comes out the bottom as slag.
Slag. Sounds kind of gross. Is it useful?
It cools into this inert, glassy rock. Because it's vitrified, nothing leaches out. You can use it for road base, construction. So you're taking a liability waste and turning it into two assets, energy and building materials.
It almost sounds too good to be true, like modern day alchemy. But this gets us to the intermittency problem. Why go through all this trouble? Why not just use solar?
Because of that post-grid reality graphic in the documents, solar gives you a nice bell curve during the day, but it's zero at night. Wind is, well, it's just chaotic. There's no base load.
And base load is that steady 247 power that keeps everything running when you're not thinking about it.
Exactly. And Remnant, the AI dean, is really blunt here. The quote is, I do not tolerate a dead grid. For real independence, you need a power source that works when the sun isn't shining. You need fire.
And managing that fire, that's where the human technician comes in. This isn't an automated machine. The docs talk about a skill they call feedstock alchemy.
It really is like cooking. The Sovereign Power Technician is basically a chef for a giant mechanical stomach. You have to blend different kinds of waste to keep the reaction stable.
Okay.
They classify it by caloric value. You have class A, that's woody biomass. Class B is agricultural waste, that corn stalks. And then there's class C, anthropogenic waste.
Human garbage, plastics.
Right. And the energy difference is just huge. The burn chart shows corn stover at, what, 3,500 kilocalories per kilo? But HDPE plastic, that's 8,000.
Whoa, more than double.
It's basically rocket fuel in comparison. So imagine you're the operator. If you just dump a bunch of plastic in there, what do you think happens?
A thermal runaway. A huge temperature spike.
You'd melt the reactor. But if you only use wet wood, the temperature plummets and you're wasting energy. So the technician has to be constantly blending, like a DJ mixing tracks, to keep it at that perfect 1500 degrees.
Constantly adjusting the recipe.
Constantly. And you have to watch out for the no-go list. You can't just throw everything in there.
I saw PVC on that list. Polyvinyl chloride.
That's the big one. You gasify PVC, you get chlorine gas. It eats the machine from the inside out and, you know, it can kill you. So that's a definite no. Batteries, heavy metals, also banned.
This really shows why you need the certification. You can't just let anyone operate this thing. The stakes are just too high.
Which brings us to the course itself. It's a 50-hour hybrid course. But there's this one mechanism in the curriculum. They call it the hard gate. It's something I've never really seen before.
That was Module 02, right? The safety module.
Exactly. Module 02, safety and compliance. It covers high voltage, arc flash, thermal limits, and LOTO.
LOTO.
Lockout, tagout, standard industrial safety protocol. But here's the kicker. Modules 3 through 6 are literally encrypted.
So you can't even look at the fun stuff, the reactor operations, until you pass safety.
You can't even open the files. And to pass Module 02, the grade isn't 70% or even 90%. It is 100%.
100%. No margin for error. That is intense.
Remnant's logic is just cold and clear. The quote is, I do not tolerate arc flashes. It's a hard stop. D-Reticular is saying, we will not even let you simulate this until you prove you know how not to kill yourself.
And once you get that 100%, you unlock the Aggressum. This is built on the Unity engine, so it's basically a video game.
It's a flight simulator for energy. And you need that, because you don't want a trainee practicing a cold start on a multi-million dollar machine.
A cold start being taking it from ambient temperature all the way to 1500 degrees.
Right. It's a delicate process. Too fast, you crack the containment vessel. In the Aggressum, you can blow it up 100 times and it costs nothing. They also run crisis drills.
That sounds stressful.
It's meant to be. You get pressure spikes, emergency purges, alarms are blaring, lights are flashing. It builds that muscle memory you need for when things go wrong for real.
And all of that builds to the final exam. Module 06, the endurance run.
The name alone sounds tough. It's a 4-hour final where you manage a whole virtual shift by yourself.
And they just throw curveballs at you the whole time.
It's scripted chaos. The outline says, like, in hour one, your supply truck is late, so you're low on fuel. In hour two, the truck shows up, but it only has plastic, no wood, so you have to completely change your feedstock mix on the fly.
Yeah, hour three.
A thermal spike combined with a grid destabilization. You're basically juggling chainsaws. And if you make it through, you get the badge. If you fail, you have to start the whole 4 hours over.
Wow. You really earn it. So let's say you pass. You get the badge, but you also get this digital toolbox. This is where that blue-collar AI idea really clicks for me.
Yeah, you're not alone out there. You have Remnant with you as an AI assistant. The feature that really jumped out was the computer vision tool.
The show me the broken part, I show you how to fix it line.
Exactly. You're in the field, maybe it's dark, a valve is leaking, you just point your phone's camera at it. The AI identifies the exact part, pulls up the schematic, and gives you a step-by-step guide to fix it.
That's incredible. It completely closes that knowledge gap. But wait, what if you're in a dead grid situation? What if there's no internet?
That's the offline capability. They call it the field library. The core AI and all the manuals are stored locally on your device. So if you're out at a remote node and the satellite link is down, you can still figure out how to fix the machine.
It's a pocket expert that works offline. Okay, so let's talk about the credential itself. It's not just a PDF you print out. It's a green hexagon badge minted on the RIOS blockchain.
The B word, blockchain. Yeah.
I know. My first thought was, is this just buzzword bingo? Yeah. Or does it actually do something useful here?
I think in the context of what they call DePIN, it actually does.
DePIN.
Decentralized physical infrastructure networks. So think of networks where individuals or small groups own and operate their own power plants.
Okay, I can see that.
Well, in a network like that, trust is everything. If I'm investing in a power node in, say, Uganda from my desk in London, How do I know the operator is qualified? How do I know they're not going to blow up my investment?
You can't just fly over for an interview.
Right. The blockchain badge is proof. It's verifiable. It's immutable. It proves to the entire network that this person is qualified. You can't fake it. It's about authenticating the human layer of the network.
It's like a universal driver's license for power operators. That makes sense. Okay, let's talk economics. The course has a price, and it's tiered.
Yes, and the strategy is pretty smart. Tier 1 is the industrial operator. That's $1,199.
$1,200. That's a lot for an online course.
It is, but that's for commercial power producers, the big companies. The profit margin on that is huge, like 96%. That's the cash cow.
Okay, so what about Tier 2?
That's the village engineer. The price drops all the way to $149. It's subsidized for NGOs in developing regions like that Node 4 in Uganda they keep mentioning.
And Tier 3 is just free?
It's free. The OEM bundle, you buy the Agra Power Core machine, you get two training seats included, own the iron, get the knowledge.
But back to that $1,200 price tag. How do they justify that to a business?
This is the really clever part, the insurance arbitrage. It's buried in the SWOT analysis. Dereticular is planning to negotiate a 10% liability insurance reduction for any facility that employs certified SPT holders.
Wait, hold on. So if my staff is certified, my insurance company gives me a discount.
Exactly. And insurance on a power plant is. It's a massive expense. A 10% discount could be thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars a year.
So the $1,200 course,
it pays for itself, probably in the first year. It turns education from a cost into a risk management asset. It's a brilliant move.
It really is.
Yeah.
But there has to be a catch. Is there recurring revenue?
Oh, of course. The safety certificate expires every 2 years. Safety protocols rot, if not refreshed, is the quote. So it's $299 to renew. It keeps the operator sharp and the revenue coming in.
Okay, but it's not a perfect plan. The SWOT analysis points out some pretty big weaknesses.
The biggest one, operationally, is what they call the bandwidth bottleneck. The course requires an 8.4 gigabyte download.
Ouch. 8.4 gigs. For that village engineer in a place with spotty, expensive internet, that's a huge barrier.
It's a huge barrier. And you need a fairly decent PC or Mac to run the simulation. A lot of their target users might only have a low-end smartphone. It's a major conflict in their strategy.
So what's the fix?
The document suggests a very low-tech solution, digital deployment kits.
You mean a USB stick?
Basically, yeah. They mail you the course on a thumb drive, SneakerNet saves the day.
I love that. Sometimes the simplest solution is the best.
Right.
Okay, but what about external threats? What could kill this whole thing?
Two big ones. First is regulatory creep. The risk that the EPA or someone in the EU decides microgasification is just a fancy name for incineration and regulates it into the ground.
They could just legislate the fire away.
They could. But the bigger, more existential threat is what they call the solar singularity.
That sounds dramatic.
It's the idea that solar panels and battery storage could become so ridiculously cheap that this whole complex gasification process just becomes economically unjustifiable.
So if batteries get good enough and cheap enough to store solar power for days, you just don't need the plasma reactor.
Exactly. If you solve the intermittency problem with cheap batteries, you don't need the fire. You don't need the feedstock alchemy. You don't need the sovereign power technician.
So this entire thing is a bridge technology. It's for the world we live in now. Not necessarily the one we'll be in 30 years.
And until then, it's this really compelling attempt to build civilization in a box, these little islands of self-sufficient power.
And I think that's the key takeaway, isn't it? It's about building resilience.
Resilience through this combination of, you know, high-tech AI and very dirty hands-on physical work.
And for you, listening at home, why should you care? Because this signals a real shift in what a tech job might be.
Mm.
For 20 years, this answer has been learn to code.
The logic in these documents is that AI will replace a junior coder long before it can replace the mechanic who fixes the power plant that the AI runs on. The AI can't turn a wrench.
It's creating a truly future-proof trade, one that bridges that digital-physical divide.
Absolutely.
So here's the thought I want to leave you with. These technicians are called keepers of the flame. In our world of smart cities built on these fragile grids, we celebrate the cloud, but we ignore the generator in the basement. So ask yourself this. Is the ultimate tech job of 2026 actually a blue-collar trade? Are we about to enter the age of the philosopher mechanic?
It's a good question. Intelligence requires energy. And for now, energy still requires people.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you in the next one.
Stay charged.